He had been hospitalized for several months for the treatment of stomach cancer. His appeal, however, was turned down by the highest court in Italy, so the fraternity of ex-SS men decided to take matters into their own hands. According to the periodical Bild am Sonntag of Bonn, there is no doubt about who was involved. Quote, "The flight was planned and prepared by former members of the SS. One of them was an officer of the SS Security Service in Rome during the war." Unquote. Three of the ex-SS officers involved in the escape came from Colonia Dignidad. It was a bizarre plan, one that reminded the Italians of Scorzani's commando missions during the war. This one couldn't be blamed on him, however, since he had died of cancer 2 years earlier. Kapler's wife, Anna Lisa, visited his room on August 15th, as she did almost every day. Kapler was on the fourth floor of the military hospital in Rome, and Anna Lisa explained to the guards that she had a large suitcase with her to take home Kapler's dirty clothes. She stayed with her husband until 1 o'clock a.m., and when she left the hospital room, she was dragging the heavy suitcase. One of the guards offered to help her, but she refused, saying that a friend would meet her on the first floor to carry the suitcase. When she stepped from the elevator on the ground floor, two men were waiting. One seized the suitcase and hurried toward the red Fiat, waiting outside. The other took Kapler's wife's arm and led her to the car. A third man was behind the wheel. As soon as the suitcase was placed in the trunk of the Fiat and everyone was in the car, the driver raced the engine and drove out of the hospital parking lot. Upstairs on the fourth floor, the guards kept checking through a peephole in the door of Kapler's hospital room to make certain he was in bed. They didn't realize until next morning that they were watching a dummy made from pillows. Kapler, shriveled to less than 100 pounds by his long illness, had been carried from the hospital in the suitcase. Kapler was never taken back into custody. It was believed he was hiding in Soltau in North Germany, where Anneliese Kapler's father had been a prominent Nazi leader, but Kapler was never located. The ex-SS members who aided in Kapler's escape knew that the Federal Constitution of West Germany bars any extradition of Germans to foreign nations, so that even if Kapler had been found, he would not have been sent back to Italy. The uproar over Kapler's escape created so much criticism that it appeared for a time that the Italian government would fall. Fully 32 years after the end of the war, Hitler's elite SS had put a democratically elected European government in jeopardy.
A couple of quick points to make about this. First of all, note that Colonia Dignidad, the Nazi exile base which figured so prominently in the Kapler escape, was discovered by people following the chain of Operation Condor. That basically is the assassination program which appears inextricably linked with the Internationale Fascista that we spoke about earlier. And of course, the Muammar Gaddafi connections to Internationale Fascista, their habit of portraying themselves as assassins of the left and so forth, we discussed earlier in the broadcast. Recall now also that Stefano Della Chiai worked as an agent for the DINA. Of course, his connections to all of these things we've looked at great length. And recall also that 2 months before Kapler escaped, he was interviewed by then National Security Agent Glauco Partel and told him about the gold at the UBS. Another interesting connection between this whole P2 and U.S. intelligence tangle and Operation Condor and through that Colonia Dignidad was carried in a book called The Nazi Legacy. We've used it before, subtitled Klaus Barbie and the International Fascist Connection. Three authors, Magnus Linklater, Isabel Hilton and Neil Asherson, all of them British journalists, published in hardcover by Holt Reinhardt and Winston, copyrighted 1984. And we're going to look at another interesting person and his connections to Operation Condor. One of the receipts of Barbie's somewhat dubious currency at this time was the United States, which maintained a close relationship with the Bunzer regime. General Bunzer himself was in the classic mold of pro-United States, anti-communist dictators whose doctrine of national security was held to justify repressing dissent in the interests of stability throughout Latin America. While Barbie collaborated closely with the Bolivian Ministry of the Interior, the ministry, for its part, liaised with the CIA. One Bolivian official, who served under Bonzer's government as administrative head of the Ministry of the Interior and was its main contact with the CIA, remembers passing on information which Barbie had supplied specifically for the Americans. And on one occasion, as CIA records show, Barbie offered the agency an extraordinary document which listed the names of every KGB agent operating in the southern cone of South America. Barbie is specifically named as the source. The record reveals that the CIA not only knew where the list came from, but also believed it to be accurate. Another CIA report at this time records Barbie as housebreaker. In 1976, says the document, Barbie masterminded the burglary of the Peruvian embassy in La Paz. Acting on behalf of the Bonaire government, he photographed the files and handed over his findings to Bolivian officials. Whether the agency itself was allowed to examine the documents is not recorded. Finally, as if to emphasize the many levels on which Barbie was now operating, a CIA report shows that the agency approved a meeting organized by Barbie in 1977 in the tropical Yungas region of Bolivia between representatives of the Chilean and Bolivian intelligence services. Barbie himself attended it. According to a Bolivian official who was there, the discussion centered around coordination between the two services and the promotion of Condor, a system of mutual aid between right-wing regimes in Latin America, promoted by the U.S. to unify their anti-subversion activities. So apparently, Barbie connected with Operation Condor and working with the Chilean Secret Service in connection with that.
And bear in mind, too, this Operation Condor is the same Operation Condor that was sending out the assassination teams and blew up Orlando Letelier, former member of the Chilean government under Salvador Allende, right in the streets of downtown Washington, D.C. This same Operation Condor is an organization being promoted by the CIA through Klaus Barbie. And again, that's just to give you an idea of these. This is the above board. This is the stuff that the agency is writing down. Okay, we're going to read another article here from the New York Times for Wednesday, April 3rd, 1985.
We'll be coming back to this article at the beginning of our next program. This sort of the next three articles are sort of transitions to the next and concluding portion of the broadcast.
Yes. Now, those of you who've been listening to these broadcasts have heard, especially tonight, the name Carlo Palermo coming up quite frequently, especially in his investigations into Stibom and other organizations. And anybody who's been listening to these broadcasts must be saying to themselves, how long is Carlo Palermo going to get away with it? I mean, with everybody else flying out of the windows of buildings and being stabbed through the heart with long needles and bizarre suicide attempts in jail and et cetera, how long is Carlo Palermo going to get away with it?
Now, as you listen to the article Nip's about to read, you bear in mind that this incident occurred here just as the trial of the trial of the Bulgarians in the so-called Bulgarian connection was getting underway, presided over by Judge Martello.
And it was during this trial also that Mehmet Ali Agha's story began to finally, the whole story began to fall apart for the last time. Again, from New York Times, April 3rd, 1985, headline, Sicily car bomb kills three, judges hurt. The article is by E.J. Dion, Jr., special to the New York Times, dateline, Pizzolungo, Sicily. A car bomb, apparently intended for an Italian magistrate, exploded in this seaside town today, killing a woman and her two children. The judge escaped with minor injuries. The police said the attack appeared to have been organized by the mafia. It was one of a series of attacks on magistrates in Sicily. The assault was similar to a bombing in Palermo that killed a judge and his escort in 1983. The judge wounded today, Carlo Palermo, has been involved in investigations of the mafia and an inquiry of his into international arms trading and its links with drug trafficking, has angered leading political figures in Italy. Skipping down, Judge Palermo was transferred here from Trent in northern Italy and became deputy prosecuting attorney in Trapani on January 5th. He took the post left vacant by Judge Antonio Costa, who was jailed last August on charges of collusion with the mafia. Judge Palermo's responsibilities involve investigating the mafia in western Sicily. 2 weeks ago, he issued five arrest warrants, including two against prominent Trapani businessmen. The businessmen are accused of illegal currency trading involving funds that are believed to have come from the mafia. But the magistrate was best known for his four-year investigation in Trento into a gun and drug smuggling ring that reportedly involved both Italians and foreigners. Last November, the judge indicted 37 people for the sale of tanks, missiles, and other weapons to countries in the Middle East, Asia, and Africa. Among those indicted were 25 Italians, 9 Turks, 2 Syrians, and an Egyptian. Judge Palermo's case covered a sensitive area. The weapons business and drug trade often overlap, according to the judge's 5,698-page report, and intelligence agencies are often involved in both. Truer words were ne'er spoke, Nip Tuck mentions parenthetically. The judge's investigation included interrogations of Mehmet Ali Agha, the man convicted of shooting Pope John Paul II, and spanned purported Bulgarian arms trafficking and the activities of American drug agents. The case angered Prime Minister Bettino Craxi, who criticized the judge after it was learned that the magistrate was investigating a leading figure in the Socialist Party, which Mr. Craxi leads. It should be just mentioned that Bettino Craxi is the leader of the Socialist Party. He's currently in charge in Italy. Interestingly enough, the Socialist Party in Italy was the party that received massive support from the CIA to prevent the Communist Party from coming into power in Italy after the war. And the Socialist Party in Italy has continued to benefit from support from American intelligence agencies.
One thing we looked at in our last broadcast, and we'll be looking at again in the concluding broadcast, is that Licio Gelli had worked to effect a reconciliation between Bettino Craxi and Giulio Andreotti, who is currently his foreign minister. We'll be talking about that next week as well. Now, remember, Judge Palermo, just as Judge Martella's trial of the so-called Bulgarian connection is getting underway in Italy, Judge Palermo narrowly escapes a bomb going off, a pattern which is only too familiar both with participants and investigators in the various tangle of events we've been talking about. Another of the things that we've noted is how often, when some of the key suspects are in prison, they die at key times. Just such a death occurred, a report of just such a death was carried in the New York Times of October 15, 1985. An AP story out of Ankara, it's headlined, "A Turk in Papal Trial is Dead." A Turk who was being tried in absentia in Rome, in the Rome trial of eight men accused of conspiring to kill Pope John Paul II, died here of a heart attack, the Anatolian news agency reported. The dispatch said that the man, Bekir Çelenk, had suffered a heart attack at the Mamak military prison and died on the way to the Gulhane hospital. The agency said his body was in the hospital morgue. Mr. Çelenk, 51 years old, was standing trial here on charges of arms and drug smuggling. He faced the death penalty if convicted. The court in the papal case in Rome was planning to move here this month to question Mr. Çelenk and other witnesses in connection with the purported plot against the Pope. Mr. Çelenk was being tried in absentia in Rome as an accomplice in the 1981 shooting of the Pope. He was charged with conspiracy after Mehmet Ali Agha, a Turk convicted of trying to assassinate the Pope, turned state's evidence and implicated others. And again, Bekir Çelenk, one of the three top people involved with the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring, involved, according to a top Turkish expert, with the Grey Wolves, and according to Mehmet Ali Agha, he was the paymaster of the papal plot, the plot against the Pope's life. Just before the court trying the Pope case was going to hear Çelenk's testimony, he dies in prison. A pattern that is only too familiar and should be taken into consideration with the attempt on the life of Judge Palermo as the Pope shooting trial was beginning.
And again, as long as we're on the track of these tragically ironic coincidences that keep occurring in this case, I'm going to read one last article, one last obituary.
We read this in the broadcast. Last week, I guess it was, when we talked about the Super Sees Me. Recall now that the individual here is Giuseppe Santavito. Recall his role with Rossano Brazzi, Massimo Pugliese, and others in the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring, according to the information we looked at earlier.
Exactly. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle from February 7th, 1984. It is an obituary, and it is for General Giuseppe Santavito, Dateline Florence, Italy. General Giuseppe Santavito, age 65, the former head of Italy's military intelligence, who reportedly was linked to a series of major scandals in recent years, died Sunday. Santavito was arrested December 2nd and charged with revealing secret information about Italian terrorist groups and their foreign links. He was later released from prison to undergo liver surgery. His name had surfaced in investigations ranging from the uncovering of the secret Masonic lodge, Propaganda Due, to alleged links with a multi-billion dollar arms and drug trafficking ring in the Mideast.
Santavito arrested in December, dead in February. A common pattern.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do here, I think we've got about 6 or 7 minutes really of time, and then we've got a song we're going to play and stuff. I think we're going to just use this time to sum up and to give you the DAVCorp addresses and things of that nature. Again, the most important thing to be emphasized tonight, because we swung far afield, as Dave mentioned coming in the broadcast tonight, we were doing the other hemisphere of the Mediterranean merry-go-round and swinging out into Africa and the Middle East and Australia and Asia and all over the place. But the thing that I think is most important that people take home with them is the fact that on one hand, as we're going to talk about next week, there's this monumental house of cards, very flimsy structure, which is the Bulgarian thesis, where on the other hand, there is, I guess, what for lack of any other name right at the moment, we're going to call the P2 thesis, which is very direct and is about as easy to knock down as, say, the Golden Gate Bridge or something. I mean, this baby is built.
And in the background of the P2 thesis, Western intelligence, specifically American intelligence.
Absolutely. And the P2 thesis, such as it is, or anyway, the connective link that we established tonight is very simple. Mehmet Ali Agha, the man who shot the Pope, works for and was a member of the Turkish Grey Wolves neo-fascist organization involved with the Falangists in drug smuggling. Also a member of the Turkish Grey Wolves, as we found out tonight, and the paymaster of the operation that led to the shooting of the Pope, a man named Bekir Çelenk. Bekir Çelenk himself, a member of STİBOM, an international Guns for Drugs for Terrorism network that starts in the Middle East with Lebanese Falangist drugs and uses the Turkish Grey Wolves also to help move those drugs. STİBOM is intimately connected to Banco Ambrosiano and P2, which utilizes STİBOM's network to attain its political and financial goals. P2 directly connected to Banco Ambrosiano and STİBOM. P2 also directly connected into the Vatican in the person of all of its banking and financial experts and intelligence experts, but specifically the banking experts Sindona and Calvi, both of whom worked for and with Archbishop Paul Marcinkus of the Vatican Bank in a number of very bizarre and blatantly illegal, in many cases, transactions. Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, of course, the highest-ranking American in the Vatican, a man who today cannot leave the Vatican because he would undoubtedly be arrested as soon as he did so, also John Paul II's bodyguard, Il Gorilla. So John Paul II himself, the man who was shot, replaced John Paul I, the Pope who was about to investigate Paul Marcinkus' dealings with these various drug smugglers like Michele Sindona and mafiosi like Michele Sindona and international financial crooks like Roberto Calvi. And although John Paul I may not even have known it, both of them, of course, involved in a multi-billion dollar terrorism and drugs and guns scam, namely STİBOM. John Paul I turned up dead after being Pope for only 33 days. So we have a direct connection between John Paul I and his bodyguard right on out to Mehmet Ali Agha, the man who fired the bullets in St. Peter's Square on May 13th of 1981. And you cannot ask for a much more direct connection than that. And if you take nothing else away from the broadcast tonight, and you remember that, then you already are better informed than about 99% of the American populace right now.
And take note again of the mortality that accrues as these people begin to come to trial, as the case begins to unravel, and the bombs begin going off near judges, the key figures begin dying of apparent heart attacks in prison, or apparent needles through the heart in prison, a numbing and pretty scary pattern under the circumstances. Now, if you've missed our other shows in this series, or our other archive shows, 16 in the Radio Free America series, the Four Guns of November shows about the assassination of President Kennedy, plus other miscellaneous shows, all of them are on file with a tape duplication service. The name of that service is called DAVCAR. I was about to say STİBOM. The name of that service is STİBOM, right? Yeah. So if you guys want some Kalashnikovs or a few Leopard tanks or maybe even A-bomb or two,
right,
just
to
take down the following number. Telex, no, seriously. You get a little giddy after doing some of this stuff, but that was a really beautiful near Freudian slip. Anyway, no, the name of the company is not STİBOM. The name of the company is DAVCOR, D-A-V-K-O-R-E. They're located at Suite 1300D, as in DAVCOR, Space Parkway, three words just like it sounds. That's in Mountain View, zip 94043. The phone number is 415-969-3030, 969-3030. Write or phone to the attention of Paul. That address, once again, DAVCOR, Suite 1300D, Space Parkway, Mountain View, California, 94043. The phone is 415-969-3030. Write or phone to the attention of Paul.
All right, now coming up this Sunday, you will want to be here on KFJC starting at 6 p.m. We are going to be playing Uncle Sam and the Swastika. For those of you who have not heard it, it's become a bit of a Memorial Day tradition.
Also, we'll give you a lot of perspective on I.G. Farben and Hermann Abs, who figure prominently, along with the Pope. And, well, If you want to find out about IG Farben and what that means, tune in Sunday at 6.
Absolutely. It's about industrial cooperation by the West, and specifically by the United States, with Nazi Germany during the rise of fascism in Germany, and also with some other particular proponents of fascism, as you will find out. That will be this Sunday starting at 6 o'clock, and after that will be aired the most recent May Brussels broadcast.
Okay, and by the way, do tune in at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning for the latest May Brussels broadcast. Okay, that I guess it won't, because that's very important, because that will not be rebroadcast the following Sunday night, because we're not going to be on the air the following Sunday night. So tune in Sunday morning at 9 for May Brussels tape 754, I believe we're up to on Sundays, because that one will not be rebroadcast, because on June 1st we're not going to be on the air at all here due to a special program.
Last but not least, those of you who have been following this, don't forget to tune in Thursday, this upcoming Thursday, when we finish off this Gibraltar of radio endeavors and put down Part 5, or V in Super Bowl terms, you know, the old Roman numeral V, Mediterranean Merry-Go-Round Part 5, the fifth of this particular Radio Free America series, in which we finally detail the rest of the American intelligence connections, begin to pull all the threads together, and see if we can't finally put together some kind of a working thesis on who actually did shoot the Pope and why.
Okay, so that's next Thursday at 7 p.m., and for the denouement, again, a Gibraltar is an appropriate word in light of where it's located. That's the Mediterranean stay in one place. This is the Mediterranean merry-go-round.
Absolutely. All right, so with that, we're going to leave you with a song, and we are going to get on the road. We want to thank you for joining us. I'm Nip Tuck with Dave Emery in the studios at KFJC. Please be sure and join us next week for the last part of this Radio Free America series, the Mediterranean merry-go-round, right here on KFJC.